Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and look into the standoff between Russia and the Ukraine in terms of energy being used as a weapon by Russia to squeeze Ukraine, and the U.S. in turn retaliating by ramping up exports of natural gas to Ukraine and the EU. Michael Clare, a Five College Professor of Peace and World Security and author of Blood and Oil and The Race for What's Left, The Global Scramble for the World's Last Resources, joins us to discuss his article at The Nation, Petromachismo, and how much the U.S. fracking boom has affected geopolitics. Then we will discuss the ramifications of the upcoming referendum in Crimea that will effectively place the Ukrainian territory just occupied by Russian forces under the Kremlin's control. John Quigley, who was a research scholar at Moscow University and has dealt with conflicts between Russia and Ukraine after the breakup of the USSR on behalf of the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe, joins us to discuss his article at the Cambridge Journal for International and Comparative Law, Finding a Way Forward for Crimea. Then finally, we'll examine the shameful vote in the U.S. Senate in which 7 Democratic senators joined the Republicans in blocking the nomination of Debo Adegbole to be Assistant Attorney General for the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division. Will Bunch, an award-winning senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, joins us to discuss the role of Pennsylvania senators, including the Democrat Senator Bob Casey, in scuttling Obama's appointment because his nominee represented a client considered a cop killer in Pennsylvania, thus establishing a dangerous precedent that makes attorneys responsible for the acts of the clients they are sworn to defend. And joining us now is Michael Clare, a Five College Professor of Peace and World Security Studies and Director of the Five College Program in Peace and World Security Studies at Hampshire College. His books include Blood and Oil and most recently The Race for What's Left, The Global Scramble for the World's Last Resources. He has an article at The Nation, Petromachismo. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Clare.
My pleasure, always.
And the Russians have used the natural gas lever as a weapon against Ukraine in the past. The pipeline goes from Russia through Ukraine into Europe, and to punish Ukraine, they've turned it off, and it had obviously had adverse consequences for Europe. But now they're threatening to up the price. They've been giving the prior to this invasion of Crimea, they've been giving Ukraine a break on the price, but now they're saying they want to increase the price. And, of course, this is a country that's, for all intents and purposes, bankrupt. So it's pretty clear that gas is being used as a weapon. And now there's talk on the American side of using American gas from the fracking boom as a counterweapon. Is that your understanding?
Yes, but it's, of course, everything in life is complicated, and this story is more complicated than that. Gazprom, the Russian state natural gas monopoly, has had close ties over the years with the Ukrainian natural gas company and energy company, and there's been a lot of collusion there. So there's been a back and forth between Moscow and Kiev over natural gas prices, and there's a lot of collusion, a lot of corruption. A lot of people have gotten oligarchs, as they're called, in both Russia and in Ukraine have gotten very rich. So one of the issues that has triggered the current crisis is the EU made an offer, a substantial offer to former President Yanukovych to open Ukraine to the EU or to closer ties with the EU. Part of that deal was that Ukraine would have to end this cozy relationship with Gazprom and institute greater transparency, greater openness in its energy operations. And it's this this was highly favored by the people who revolted against Yanukovych, but that's what forced him to reject it under pressure from Moscow. So natural gas has been central to the crisis from the very beginning.
So how quickly then could the U.S. replace these markets? Because obviously if Russia retaliates in any way by cutting, as they've done in the past, by cutting off gas to Ukraine, because the pipeline goes on to Europe, which is their main market, they are, you know, cutting off their nose to spite their face. So how quickly could the West, and particularly the U.S., come up with an alternative for, say, Ukraine, which depends upon, I think, 60% of its energy comes from Russia?
I don't see how this is feasible in any immediate conceivable time horizon. The United States does not at present have the capacity to export natural gas to Europe. We would have to convert existing facilities for importing LNG to exporting them. And right now, I think there may be one or two such facilities undergoing conversion, but then we would have to build many more of these facilities at a cost of several billion dollars each, and this would take many years for that to happen. So maybe 5 years from now, you could begin to export some amount of LNG, but to really make a difference, maybe 10 years. And let me add, this would require increased production of gas in the United States to meet domestic needs for increased gas and to satisfy increased demands in Europe. And this would require more fracking. That's where this gas is coming from. It's from fracking of shale formations in Pennsylvania, in New York State eventually, in Texas and Louisiana, Arkansas, and I'm not sure that the public is going to tolerate that much of an increase in fracking to make this possible.
Well, some of Europe already gets its natural gas from Africa, and of course Qatar is a huge exporter, and the Ukrainians are talking about building a port on the Black Sea, so that's not a big reach. And Germany is the biggest customer for Gazprom, Russian gas, followed by Ukraine, and then Turkey, Belarus, Italy, Poland, Britain, Czech Republic, France, and Hungary. So, you know, the countries that are on the Mediterranean, certainly Turkey and Italy would be customers, and presumably Britain and eventually the rest of, and France and the rest of Europe. But as you're saying, it takes time. Now, give us a, well, let me again remind the audience, if I may, that I'm speaking with Michael Clare, the Five College Professor of Peace and World Security Studies and Director of the Five College Program in Peace and World Security Studies at Hampshire College, and the author of Blood and Oil and The Race for What's Left, The Global Scramble for the World's Last Resources. He has an article at The Nation, Petromachismo. Now, let's talk about petromachismo in the context of this discussion, Michael. It's clear that the fracking boom in the United States has turned things around enormously in terms of the energy, global energy profile. The U.S. is now the world's largest exporter, eclipsing Russia. So you're arguing then this is having a geopolitical implication, right? And this is giving President Obama petromachismo?
Exactly right. And you can see this expressed openly by the president's former national security advisor while he was still working for Obama, Tom Donilon, in a speech last April at Columbia University. He said that the natural gas revolution and the increase in oil production through fracking has given the United States a new geopolitical leverage. Why? Because we're less dependent on Middle Eastern oil, so we're no longer beholden to Middle Eastern petrostates, and we can get more of our oil from Canada from the Keystone XL pipeline when it's built, presumably. And in other ways, we're becoming independent of the way we once were on Middle Eastern and African oil. This gives us a freer hand. At the same time, China is becoming more dependent on imported oil from the Middle East. So this gives us a geostrategic advantage. And I think this is the underpinning of the pivot strategy, where the U.S. is switching its pressure, its deployment of forces from the Middle East where we no longer needed to defend our supply of oil, to the Pacific to put pressure on China. And China has responded by drawing closer to Russia. And I think this has emboldened Russia. So there's been this kind of chain reaction of events. But it begins, or in part it begins anyway, with the shale gas revolution and the production of oil from shale, giving the United States a new lift in it, or at least that's the way they view it, and in foreign affairs. And this is what I call petromachismo.
Well, of course, the best laid plans, we may be pivoting to Asia, but we're still stuck in the Middle East, not knowing what to do about Syria. And now this whole situation in Ukraine is blowing up and are looking like, at least rhetorically, a return to the Cold War, at least a standoff. We know that Russia appears to be going to annex Crimea, which is a part of Ukraine, and this will probably lead to sanctions. And that's my sense, is that as soon as you start throwing sanctions around, then the Russians can retaliate. But again, I'm not sure how retaliating by cutting off its main source of cash from Europe, the Russians will be winning that game. And as you pointed out, the counter-strategy of resupplying the EU with American and other gas supplies from other parts of the world is like 4 or 5 years off. So walk us through the possible scenarios that are likely to follow from these ratcheting up of sanctions against Russia and counter-sanctions, whatever Putin decides, however Putin decides to retaliate.
Yes, of course, there are many people who like to know the answer to that. My suspicion is that you will see a splintering of Europe over this issue because, as you said earlier, Ian, Germany is the biggest customer for natural gas from Russia. And what they've done is to bypass Ukraine entirely by building a pipeline that goes directly to Russia under the Baltic Sea. The Nord Stream pipeline, this has just opened up, and it's a response to the stuff that's gone on in the Ukraine in the past, where which you talked about, where Russia cut off gas to Ukraine, and the Ukrainians then took all that gas that was supposed to go to Europe, therefore damaging Germany. So what did they do? They built a pipeline directly to Russia. So Germany is not affected by all of this. And it seems pretty clear to me that Germany is not going to impose tough sanctions on Russia as long as they go no further than Crimea, let me put it that way. And Putin has a vested interest. They're codependent. The main source of income for the Russian state is its gas exports. So I think you're going to find some kind of modus operandi where Europe agrees to Russian protectorate over the Crimea, and Russia stays out of eastern Ukraine, and things go back more or less to where they were. Europe splits. Something like that.
So in terms of the U.S., though, having any kind of leverage by being able to resupply, what's
there's no leverage there. The U.S. is not in a position at this point in time or for the next 5 to 10 years to really resupply Europe. This is a fantasy.
Well, but that doesn't mean that the oil companies aren't applying for applications to build LNG facilities to export natural gas.
This has nothing to do with geopolitics. This has to do with profit. That because now they can't export the gas, there's a lot of gas in the U.S., so prices have dropped, which has been great for American consumers and utilities. Electric costs have dropped, and manufacturers in the U.S., like Alcoa, have been able to get gas at a lower price. And the oil and gas companies want to export their gas so they could sell it at the international rate, which is 2, 3, 4 times greater than it is in the U.S. This has nothing to do with Russia.
Right, but it could. If these LNG terminals are approved, it could.
Sure, but then this will be a free market, and whether that LNG is exported to Europe or to China, more likely, or Japan, it will be up to market forces, not to geopolitics. But you're right, there, some of it will go to Europe.
So what's your sense then, Michael Clare, of what this particular petromachismo weapon that Obama has? I mean, where is it in his terms of his holster as a kind of gunslinger? You know, I'm trying to get that, trying to get to the nitty-gritty here.
I think it's a psychological boost. As Tom Donilon, the former National Security Advisor, says, it gives the U.S. more confidence to throw its weight around in international affairs. You see that with the dealings with Iran, in the sense that the U.S. can agree to negotiations, but also could agree to go to war with Iran without worrying about Iran shutting off the Strait of Hormuz and bringing the world economy to a halt, which it threatens to do all of the time, because we're not dependent anymore on Iranian Middle Eastern oil. So it gives us a freer hand in Iranian politics, and I think it gives us Washington, a freer hand in putting pressure on China in the Pacific. And I think it gives the U.S. the fantasy of putting pressure on Russia. I say fantasy because it's going to produce a backlash.
Well, clearly, though, what's happened now has created a backlash. I mean, they're talking tough. Everybody is. You know.
Yes.
So at some point or other, they're going to have to walk the walk, aren't they?
Well, absolutely. And that's what this talk about LNG is. And this is a new expression of that. And I think there will be tremendous pressure on Obama to, he had been going slow on this because this will have a negative effect on domestic interests. But I think now he's going to go full steam ahead to increase LNG exports on the basis that this will help Europe. But what I'm saying is this will not have an immediate effect.
Well, it's not often mentioned, but, you know, Putin's dissertation when he was at the Leningrad College of Minerals and Mining and Geology, I can't remember the exact title of where he got his degree, but his thesis was on how the USSR can use energy as a geopolitical weapon and control the pipelines, which they have done. I mean, they all go to Moscow in effect from the south, and you know, it's hard to not believe that the Chechen war and other activities in the Caucasus have had more to do with denying any of the post-Soviet states having the ability to transit directly to the Mediterranean export. And so there's no question that Putin knows more about oil, gas, and pipelines and just about anybody on the planet.
You were so right about this. I wrote about that in my books about energy. The situation is changing a bit for Putin because of the shale gas revolution. His situation has deteriorated, and that's because his existing oil and gas fields are in decline, and there's a lot more undeveloped oil and gas in Russia, but it's all in the Arctic, and it's going to be in Siberia and the Arctic, and it's going to be very costly to produce, very costly, very difficult, very challenging. And to begin with, Gazprom lacks the technology to do that, so he's being forced to cut deals with ExxonMobil to go up there, number one. And number two, fracking is cheaper. It's a cheaper way to produce energy, and this is encouraging Europeans to start fracking and encouraging all these ideas of LNG imports from around the world that we're talking about.
Sure. Well, Michael Clare, just in closing, will, though, this eventually push Russia, you know, a few years down the pipeline, if you will? Will this push Russia more towards China, and will China become the replacement market for Russian oil and gas after Europe gets its independence, assuming it has that way?
I think you hit the nail on the head. In fact, I heard in person, I heard Putin say this. The EU has brought an antitrust case against Gazprom for anti-competitive behavior in Europe. And in response to a question at a press conference I attended, he said that, well, we don't think this will go anywhere, but if it does, we're going to respond by shifting more and more of our exports to Asia, to China and Japan. So you're quite right. That is his plan B.
Well, Michael Clare, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, as always.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Clare, who's a Five College Professor of Peace and World Security Studies and Director of the Five College Program in Peace and World Security Studies at Hampshire College. His books include Blood and Oil and The Race for What's Left, The Global Scramble for the World's Last Resources, and he has an article at The Nation, Petromachismo. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the ramifications of the upcoming referendum in Crimea.